Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 16th of February, and we talk about teachers the first hour of our program today. Yesterday, the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, met with teachers in Washington, D.C. to outline a $5 billion competitive grant program to encourage states to overhaul the teaching profession. Race to the Top School Improvement Competition was used as a model. There is, of course, well, everybody knows this, a growing body of research that shows the huge difference that effective teachers can play in student lives, from reducing teenage pregnancies to increasing a student's lifetime earnings. Duncan says frequently during speeches that he gives that within the next 10 years, about 1 million baby boomer teachers will retire, and quality teachers are needed to fill those spots. And yet, according to a study from McKinsey and Company, a global consulting firm, there were these findings: only about a quarter of new teachers come from the top third of their class, and prestige and peer group appeal, along with compensation, were factors influencing whether top college students will enter teaching. So let's talk about the training and recruitment of future teachers. The Secretary of Education also called for a better training program for teachers, and I'm sure that we'll get more than a few phone calls on this issue. We have many educators who listen to this program. Professor Steve Correa is our guest. He is Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College, and he joins us frequently to talk about education issues. He comes from a long line of teachers. He's told us about his favorite aunt, who began her teaching career prior to World War I, riding a horse to school over the mountains of rural Maryland. He was a high school teacher before attending graduate school, a high school social studies teacher, and his current classes have a field-based component with experiences planned to observe and teach in local schools. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Professor Steve Correa, welcome to the program again. Nice to have you here.
Well, good morning, and always glad to join you.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. Well, here we go. Yet another announcement about how we attract people to teachers and how we should pay them and how we should pay them based on performance. It seems to me as though some of this, tell me if you think I'm wrong, is fairly obvious. Pay them a decent wage and give them some RESPECT.
Yeah, I think Aretha could teach all of us a little something about ways to do that. Of course, if I was an economist, we would simply be talking about incentives. And we might say there are some, at least some disincentives that have occurred within the state of Wisconsin in the last year or so regarding teaching, with a de facto decrease in pay for public teachers. And but the Obama administration is indeed identifying something important. Now, it's about as obvious as the fact that we're having a mild winter in Wisconsin, so it's not particularly insightful, as you said, and it's not new, and it's certainly not going to be new, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, but the idea that we want to attract the best and brightest, absolutely. That's the teacher I want my students to have and my children to have, and that's the students we try to produce. But this is not a new idea, but certainly it's one that can gain some traction because, I mean, who wants to be soft on education? Everybody wants to support education.
So what are the details of this program? It's a $5 billion competitive grant program to encourage states to overhaul the profession. What are the details?
Yeah, I think that anything that happens in Washington, D.C. from now till November is undoubtedly coupled and linked and contained within a political nature. And so it's interesting. I was reading the website of the chairman of the House Committee on Education and Workforce, who's a gentleman who's a congressman from Eastern Minnesota, John Klein. It's a district just south of Michelle Bachmann's in Woodbury. And he pointed out that these are good ideas. We like these ideas. However, presently we have 82 different federal programs aimed at teacher training within 10 different federal agencies.
Oh, my goodness.
And the last thing we need is one more on top of all that. Now, he's correct. There are that many programs, although I have to say I found like over 90, but who quibbles after that many? But the idea is that, again, people are saying they like the idea. However, politics is jumping into this. So the Obama administration unveiled, this is within the big omnibus bill proposal, but the idea is that we're going to have X number of teachers retiring. Although I'll tell you, the retirement rate keeps going down as the economy joins it. They do think there will be certainly a large number retiring. And therefore, we want to attract the best and the brightest to teaching. And so the idea is to be able to somehow incentivize, though that is not totally clear, more the best and brightest to come into teaching, because we do know good teachers make a difference. That is not exactly rocket science research.
Right.
But people want to be able to do that. So what they're trying to do is, instead of having this be a top-down federal program, they're trying to distribute this to the 50 states. Guam's included, too, by the way. I don't think we have many listeners there, but it's an important idea that it also goes to all the territories. And the idea is then that the states will develop programs intended to not only attract, here's the big one, retain quality teachers. We do probably lose 30 to 40% of teachers in the first 5 years. That's a significant number.
Yes, it is.
And now, we've been trying this for a while, but the idea is, theoretically, that these will create frameworks and models, and then districts and states around the United States will emulate those when they see what's effective, and hopefully attract the best and brightest to their districts.
And what are the studies showing about the people who are now attracted to the teaching profession? Is it gaining some momentum among the best and brightest of the students who are graduating from our colleges, or because of all that's happened in terms of education being in flux in this country, the number of charter schools, the number of voucher schools, pay being lower for teachers in those kinds of schools, the disrespect. I think that teachers have been given a rough time in the last couple of years in certain states, particularly. They're just not honored very much. So who's attracted to the profession now? Is that a problem or not?
No. It clearly is. I recall when I was an undergraduate at the Ohio State University, I had an elderly gentleman for a political science class, and he was just delightful, had a very thick German accent. And at one point, one of the students in class asked him, what made him be a professor, and how did he end up in Columbus, Ohio? Well, he sat down, paused, and we got 15 wonderful minutes of this gentleman talking about being a professor in Germany in the late 1930s, and it was Herr Professor, and movie lines. People would allow him to go to the front of the movie line. He would be given tables in restaurants. He just said it was almost magical in retrospect. At the time, it was part of the culture. He left because he was Jewish, and there were a few bad things going on in Germany.
Yes.
At the time, and he was able to get out. But he said that in the United States, he realized he was about as important as the next person in line. He liked the egalitarianism, but he didn't appreciate not getting good tables in restaurants anymore. But the idea being that with the current political climate, and teachers clearly are seen now as the scapegoats to a lot of people for some of the challenges that go on, which, by the way, as a quick aside, USA Today has a wonderful story today about a Brookings Institute release that really questions whether or not we're as bad as we are with international comparisons.
Oh, really?
In fact, the study says, when one really drills down and looks at these, there are no statistically significant differences between academic performance, broadly speaking, across the United States and most other industrial nations. But as an aside, that's the perception that schools are in trouble, and therefore, in this era of divide and conquer politics, teachers are the ones that have to be held responsible, because blaming people make other people feel good. And so you have public service people dedicating their careers in a very altruistic, you know, the old, you know, nobody goes into teaching, as we all know, because of financial incentives.
Of course.
And so when you're looking at the incentives to draw people to teaching, since we can forego getting to the front of the movie line and getting great seats in restaurants, we're looking at personal fulfillment. And yet there is still a basic economic need. Well, college costs are rising. Demands are increasing. I think teachers are up to the challenge. But the incentives to enter the field really haven't changed. And if anybody remembers that wonderful TV show Northern Exposure, and the doctor that was brought up to Northern Alaska, that was part of that program of providing loan relief for physicians, a real federal program or state-based one. Well, when we're looking at incentives to draw people to teaching, how do we address incentives of attracting and retaining? And part of that might be looking at loan forgiveness, looking at opportunities, looking at development. But without doing that, the current media and political climate, this is not a way to attract people to a program.
Right. No.
And it's not going to happen. So substance has to be added to these. Now, what they're saying is, let's look at the 50 states, and they can come up with this rather than one blanket program that would go on, you know, across from coast to coast.
A part of this program, and certainly it's been a subject of debate, as you know, for quite some time, is how we pay teachers and whether or not we tie their pay to seniority in some way or performance. And then we have this ongoing debate of how you determine whether or not a teacher is performing well. What do you base it on? Is it how well students perform on tests? Is it how excited they are about learning? What in the world is it? What? How does this program, this grant, address that issue? And how should we address that issue?
And that's a really good question, because anybody that's been involved in any sort of teaching enterprise, now occasionally one may point to a certain teacher that provides some wonderful motivation for you, or theoretically has caused the wheels to fall off the cart. But in essence, teaching is a very cooperative enterprise. And to be able to tease out a particular academic performance and link that directly to a particular teacher in a particular year, an elementary school, come on, there's reading specialists, there's gym, there's music, there's art, there's, you maybe move from reading to, you know, social studies to math. And so probably tying it to one measure, to one person, to one outcome, that's not really a good idea, simply because it doesn't match the reality of what goes on. New Mexico just recently was approved for some waivers from No Child Left Behind. And interestingly, now we don't usually think of New Mexico on the cutting edge of education, but they're actually beginning the conversation to how can we look at a menu and a wide range of inputs that affect a student's performance at the end, and then how do we try to quantify some of that in a meaningful way that allow the totality of all of these to evaluate what impact teachers had. And so they're looking at test scores along with retention, along with individual student improvement, and they're trying to tease out, perhaps in some way, how much have each of these people had an impact on the student's performance. They know it's not one teacher, one test score, one grade, one final number, and we're done. And I think lots of the states will move to that model, attempting to tease out and ascertain what did this teacher affect, or what did these groups of teachers affect. That's probably a good thing. But anyone needs to think, wow, that's a tough, that we really need to input and look at this process. And so that's a good thing to do. But no one would say it's one measure, one teacher. Right. And so that's where some of these broad brushstrokes of teachers need to be evaluated on individual students' test scores. I mean, that's not the way it works. And so that one won't fly. And so kudos to the Obama administration to say, this is complex. Maybe the states are in a better setting to be able to do this.
Professor Steve Correa is our guest this hour, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College, who best to talk to as we examine the issue of the Obama administration introducing competition combined with cash, hoping that states and school districts will work to improve the nation's teaching corps. And, of course, the broader question is, how in the world is that to be done? This program is titled Respect, Recognizing Educational Success, Professional Excellence, and Collaborative Teaching Project. And it was announced yesterday by the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. Here's our phone number. One line is open, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, we will be talking about a campaign that hopes to reduce Wisconsin's prison population to 11,000 by the year 2015. Reverend Willie Briscoe, president of the Milwaukee Inner City Allied for Hope, MICA, and Mandela Barnes, lead organizer for the same organization, will be with us to talk about this campaign, which will begin in earnest. Actually, the planning has already been underway for some time. It will begin in earnest on Monday of next week and will involve congregations all over the state of Wisconsin. So we'll look at alternatives to incarceration and Wisconsin's high incarceration rate. Adam from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Adam.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I've been listening carefully to all the things he's saying. And I think a picture is worth a thousand words. My mother was a public school teacher for MPS in Milwaukee for at least 25 years, and she entered her career at the school at 27th and Wisconsin Avenue. And she'd find the children from the teacher's room across the hallway wandering around the hallway and wanted to know what the problem was, why they weren't in class. And they would say, teacher's not feeling well, or teacher's sick or something. So my mother would go check on this teacher, and really thought she was in pretty bad straits. So she informed the principal that this teacher was really at such a low level that probably couldn't really be doing much as far as teaching or even maintaining discipline in the classroom. Well, then, subsequently, all the kids were out in the hallway, so my mother asked them, why are you out in the hallway? Well, teacher's really, really sick. So my mother goes in there, finds the teacher had leaned down on the desk and actually died in front of all those children. Now, I can't think of a school led by a principal more out of touch with the teachers on his faculty or with the educational mission of that school. And if you can think of anything more out of touch than that, I'd like to know.
Well, that's a real rare occurrence, Adam. That's not something that happens frequently. Are you making a general statement about principals being out of touch with needs of teachers, or where are we going with this?
Well, as I've said before, you know, on this issue, that particular principal was selected by the local unit of the Democrat Party. He was a super brown noser, and he wasn't really interested in children or teaching. That's how he ended up.
Well, the teacher died. People die. It was unfortunate that the person died. I don't know, Professor Correa. I don't know if there's anything we can do with that call.
Well, it is, you know, and I'm certainly in no way doubting that this incident took place. Goodness, this gentleman made the point to call, and so, you know, we will defer to his experience. It sounds suspiciously like, though, a movie that came out back in 1984 named Teachers. Anybody might remember that. Nick Nolte, Richard Mulligan. The only reason I remember that movie is I happen to have student taught in the building that it was filmed in. And it's a case where the most effective teacher in the building through the context of the movie was Richard Mulligan. People might remember him from a few TV shows. The secretary had accidentally dialed the wrong number for a substitute and had contacted a mental health facility, and he happened to have answered the phone. Well, the students loved him as he came. He dressed in costumes and was delightful. One of the most effective, but there was a teacher who, his nickname in the movie was Ditto. The students came in, grabbed Dittos, and sat down at their desk and filled out worksheets all day. Well, during second period, this teacher had a heart attack and died. And but the students continued to file in and file out, grabbing these pieces of paper. And so the idea was, one of the messages of the movie was, this teacher was just as effective dead or alive, and the best teacher was the one who could not have broken the mold more. But what we might say is, I think the lesson that we might take from the caller is there's also an element of much of the teacher reform expectations that are going on today with principals and supervision and effective leadership within schools. And that's a very interesting topic because principals have quite a lot hoisted on them, and principals are saying, we don't really have the training to be able to look at as ourselves as a manager of education and not so much a supervisor of teachers. So, you know, it's changing the focus of what goes on in schools a little bit and how we look at this continuum of education. And so, now, certainly there's no excuse for this type of thing happening in a building, but the idea is it's really looking at a fundamental change as to how professionals integrate with each other and coordinate and help look at that progression of student education.
Let's go to Ellen in Milwaukee. Hi, Ellen.
This is a huge topic, and it's really going to be difficult to solve this huge topic because of the way, I mean, I don't see it happening here in Wisconsin with the way teachers are being disregarded. And secondly, I heard one of the GOP candidates yesterday for president saying that we should get federal and state monies out of the school system. And I don't know where that would leave our school system. It seems like they just want to privatize everything, and pretty soon we'll have private schools and be paying for our children to go to school, and we won't even, and I suppose the people that are poorest will be going to the very poor schools, not that they're not only already doing that.
Professor Correa.
You know, I think the caller really raises an interesting idea. We have had, really since the middle 60s, much more of a direct federal role in education. And irrespective of one's politics, this was the type of argument that Barry Goldwater made as sort of, you know, the founding father of modern conservatism. And the idea was that this isn't a place for the federal government. Now, the other side of that coin is, if not the federal government, who? When you're looking at Little Rock and these type of activities that were going on in the states. So as the federal government has really come to have much more of a powerful role, which for actual dollar amounts works out to about 11 cents of every dollar comes from the federal government, but a lot of that is, free and reduced lunch money and title programs, reading and special needs, that kind of thing. The federal government wields a disproportionate impact on local schools because they control these. The Obama administration is trying to make a few more carrots and a few less sticks, but the caller does point out something that's very interesting. We've come to look at the federal government almost as a benevolent way to be able to guide education, but there currently, politically, there is a group that says, you know, Ron Paul, for example, a real libertarian, says, no, it's not right. Let the states guide this. Certainly, if Republicans win this time, there will be a more of an increase in charter schools, probably a redistribution of money, probably expectations of incentives for homeschooling, maybe a redistribution of federal money. But it is very much a fundamental discussion of the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, those two that kind of get people to roll their eyes, powers reserved to the federal government, powers reserved to the states. And we've moved towards much more of a federal role, and we expect that, but not everybody thinks that's the way to go. Certainly at this point, lunches, special needs, et cetera, those kind of programs, Milwaukee could not make the food federal lunch program without the federal government. So some states are, you know, very, very dependent on that. And she's right. Without that federal money, boy, we're going to have quite a retreat with what school districts can offer or do.
Thanks, Ellen, for your call. Rachel in Madison, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. Uh-huh. Wonderful guest. Thank you so much for what you've done for the teaching community. I just have a couple things. I'm a student at UW-Madison Graduate School, and I have noticed a huge number, and I don't think this is just anecdotal, of professors taking early retirement, sometimes extremely early retirement, because they just take too much of a financial hit from Walker's bill. I'm not sure exactly what the details are, but my own advisor, wonderful professor, has had to retire. I fear that this is going to cause a huge brain drain in the state of Wisconsin, and plus I know a lot of teachers in elementary school who are, you know, looking at losing their houses if they stay teaching in this state. And they are leaving as well, and another brain drain. And then my second point was just with these, what I think are quite silly performance based on testing things. I fear that our students are really losing their ability for critical thinking skills. They're not tested on that at all. And as a TA myself, I've just seen that when kids are asked a critical thinking question to put their facts into, they're stymied. They have no clue what to do. And, and I see teachers having a great deal of disrespect from the government and the state. They're called lazy and greedy, which couldn't be farther from the truth. And, I mean, these teachers, it's almost an impossible job, in my opinion. And then, there was one more point. Oh, and then having the state government run it, I mean, to be quite frank, Governor Walker is basically scientifically illiterate. The guy thinks global warming isn't happening. So we're letting this kind of person dictate our school funding and policy rather than the federal government, and maybe they're not doing a good job. I mean, what are the solutions to this? What do you think?
In 5 minutes or less, right? No.
You have a little more time than that.
Yeah.
But
being an Ohio State graduate and a Penn State graduate, I kiddingly joke my colleagues who went to Madison, but clearly she's at one of the finest graduate schools in the world. I'm sure her experience with professors is quite exemplary. We do, though, have a sort of an interesting issue going on in Wisconsin in that, again, teachers and the educational establishment are perhaps used to saying why we work hard, why what we do is valuable, why we do what we do, but they're not used to being caused and labeled as the blame for a problem which, as you strip away the layers, one could really question. Now, there are problems, clearly. We have an achievement gap. We have a dropout rate, those kind of things. But the problem does not go all the way across the state. It doesn't cut across populations. And as I'm sure the caller's aware, we've never educated more people. We've never had more graduate from high school ever in American history. We've never had more numbers go to college. We've never had more graduate. It sort of depends in which way one wants to slice it and look at it. But by many measures, American education system is very effective. Now, will there be more people to fill in? Yes. Are new graduates happy that there are job opportunities? Oh, they're excited. But there is a short-term issue. We do have people leaving the field or retiring early. Some of that is just sort of dynamics, but the attack on teaching is one that should be troubling to anybody because, A, it doesn't solve the problem, and B, if indeed there is a problem, it's going to make it worse because you blame the people in the system. And systems do not generally get reformed without, they get reformed within. And so, again, that divide and conquer politics, it makes for good media cycle coverage. It doesn't make for effective reform.
Thank you, Rachel, so much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Ron in Evansville. Hi.
Yes, good morning. Here's how I see it. I'm 57 years old. I've been attached with education, either as a participant, certainly educated in many ways. But what I see is an increasing complexity where the simple becomes more and more difficult. And I think part of it goes to this. As I see it, the Constitution puts education as a parent and a state issue. So we have a federal Department of Education, which, as I see it, does nothing but cause complexity, cost billions of dollars. We have No Child Left Behind, which is an unattainable bill. Then we have a president granting immunity to states, stepping outside of his constitutional roles to do that. And if you will, the problem gets worse and worse the more the government, federal government, helps and helps. And then to the issue of taking federal money to help schools, well, the feds got the money to start with from the citizens. And so if they wouldn't take the money and the responsibilities went back to the parents and students, like it was when America had, I think, the highest education ever in its early days. I mean, if you read an eighth-grade English manual from 1850, you'd be quite surprised at its depth, very surprised. In fact, graduate students today would wrestle with those concepts, which were common then.
But a lot of people didn't go to school then, Ron.
What's that?
A lot of people didn't go to school then. Now we're educating many more people now.
They were taught by their parents. Families stayed together. At the time of the Revolutionary War, over 97% of the people were literate. We don't have that today. Read the Declaration of Independence. This is how the people thought and spoke. You don't have that today. They were homeschooled or taught through their churches. But they were educated people.
So what model do you think we need to look at? It should be up to individual states what kind of system they should put in place to educate the students?
I think the first responsibility is a parental responsibility. That's the first. The next size, then, of institution that people are involved in would be their local government, going up to eventually the state. At the state level, Constitution basically reserves to the federal government very specific powers and says everything else belongs to the states and the people. The federal government, not only in education, but in many ways, has far exceeded the Constitution, creating problems. Then you have to turn around, go to the federal government to find a solution to the problems they've created.
All right, Professor Correa.
Well, this is a great political science class, and wonderful questions that he raises. One of the points that the caller makes is that really what's going on now is, again, because this is a political question, they are unable to get any formal reforms to go through Congress right now. So what's happening is the Obama administration is making policy by exemption. Now, there is a legitimate constitutional question. Can you do this? And yes, people are talking about it. I think it's sort of an academic issue because I don't know that this would get resolved in a court anytime soon. But they can't get the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is the formal program that, you know, No Child Left Behind and Race to the Top and everything else is housed under. But the idea is that they're trying to reform, make changes by these exemptions to the 50-plus states. Now, one of the other things, though, that the caller talks about is federal role in education. Now, we might have some listeners who recall way back in 1958, the federal government had the National Defense Education Act, same pieces of legislation that produced the interstate highways, which also had the name defense in theirs. And that was the federal government deciding we need to prepare ourselves, in essence, for the Ruskies, and we need to have better math and science teaching. And so the federal government decided this is of national importance, and they emphasized teaching of math and science, by the way, also the new social studies and 20 other things. But it became a very broad program. But federal government directly involved in teacher training goes back over 50 years. So we really sort of have this, you know, the caller's concerns are very legitimate, but it's looking at sort of ignoring the last 52, 54, 55 years of precedence of increasing federal government. Now, you could call it intrusion if you don't like it. You could call it guidance and leadership and moral fortitude if you do like it. Go back to Brown v. Board of Education. But the federal government has assumed a more central role, and so it's now a gray area or a screen door. The standards are not clear anymore, and the delineations are not as evident. But he's certainly bringing up one that some politicians, whether or not you like Ron Paul, the man is consistent and predictable and reliable in his political philosophy, and you know where he stands. The other ones sometimes were not quite clear, but certainly this is an idea that's being discussed. Sometimes people's eyes glaze over because they sort of feel like the cow's already out of the barn. Why are we closing the door now? And others are saying, let's deal with it.
It seems as though we have a couple movements. We have more than a couple, but they are in some ways at very cross purposes. We have a movement that's been afoot for a long time that looks at America's ranking in science and in math with other countries in the world, saying we need a national standard. We need to really emphasize these subjects. We have another movement saying the public schools have really fallen down on the job. We need charter schools. We need voucher schools. But then we don't make those schools adhere to the same standards or testing that we do public schools. And so how do we get this highly educated, particularly in math and science, population that will help this country succeed if we have all these different standards of how we determine whether or not a student is learning? It seems like it's chaotic.
And it is. And, of course, that's the world of politics because,
yes,
you know, Polybius, you know, all things in the end are political and all politics are local. And we do have lots of people kind of trying to influence this. One of the goals of the Obama administration, which on the surface like a great idea, is to nearly double our number of college graduates. Now, that's a very laudable idea. The argument is that that will help to make us more economically competitive. Now, the country in the world that has the highest number of college graduates is Russia, over 50%.
Really? I didn't know that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Their economy is not an economic dynamo. Now, in Europe, one of the countries with the lowest number of college graduates, Germany, slightly less than 25%. And Germany is the economic engine of Europe right now. So it's probably not graduates that's the issue. Which, by the way, we don't have the capacity in America higher education to double the number of people there. That's just a plain geographic spatial conclusion. But we do need to look at the idea of ongoing training for people. But see, that's a very different goal, and that's a little different to measure, and that's much harder. And so you're right, we have these people arguing different points of view, and what do we want? And you know, there is no surprise that a teacher goes to school in the morning, takes a deep breath, closes their door to the classroom, if they're lucky enough to have one, and says, this is what I do. I'm making a difference with these 25, 35 students, and do what they do. Because you open that door and everything else comes pouring in. So teachers are smart and pragmatic that way. There is a lot coming, and there is a lot that is at cross purposes.
Thanks for the call, Ron. We'll take more in just a moment. We're talking about the announcement of the program RESPECT, Recognizing Educational Success, Professional Excellence, and Collaborative Teaching Project that was unveiled yesterday by the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. In a statement, he said, our goal is to work with teachers in rebuilding their profession and to elevate the teacher voice in federal, state, and local education policy. States will be designing their own proposals for teacher improvement, and the Federal Education Department selecting the most promising ones for multi-year funding. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email, we'll go to one of those when we return here, is talk@WPR.org. Second hour of our program today, Reverend Willie Briscoe, president of Milwaukee Inner City Allied for Hope, and Mandela Barnes, lead organizer for the Milwaukee Inner City Congregations Allied for Hope, will be with us to talk about this campaign that will formally be kicked off just in a couple days, but I guess we could say we're formally kicking it off too. It's an interesting program. It's calling for Wisconsin's prison population to be reduced from 22,000 to 11,000 by the year 2015. Reverend Briscoe also has a long career in law enforcement and corrections, retiring a couple of years ago as the deputy superintendent of the Milwaukee County House of Correction. So we'll look at incarceration in Wisconsin, hour two of the show. More phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And let's go to an email now from Dennis. Great teaching is not one teacher in a school doing a great job and everybody else is mediocre. The entire staff works as a team to develop excellence in students' performance. It requires vision and leadership at the top and a staff that works cooperatively in developing goals and a community and parents who are dedicated to supporting the education program. A parent or community member can tell what kind of school they have within a short time by observing students, teachers, and principals during the school day. We also need legislators who support public education, rewarding teachers instead of punishing educators for the state's financial problems. What do you say to that, Professor Correa?
Historically, classroom teachers, as the little example I gave before, have understood their role properly so because they've been rewarded for doing this, have gone in, closed the door, and delivered instruction. Now, that doesn't mean they don't talk to other people, but that's basically, most teachers historically have been evaluated on, is their classroom quiet? Are they teaching the curriculum? And does the principal have to deal with any issues? And that holds true kind of across the country. What the emailer is really bringing up is looking at this idea. Now, these are my terms, although other people have used them. They're looking at an educator that manages a student's learning and no longer is necessarily the one who imparts knowledge and information. Now, if anybody's been to the doctor lately and you need something, you probably go to a general practitioner or a family practitioner. Maybe you're lucky enough to have an internist. You want a doctor that has a real top-down view of the field of medicine. This is a specialist. This specialist is good. They will do this kind of test, and I will coordinate those tests, and I will look everything over, and I will diagnose what's going on. Now, that skill set is very different than a doctor that's going to look at you and say, here's your ailment, here's your prescription, you're done. Teachers need to be able to, and this is one of the reforms that are valuable, classroom teachers need to be able to look at those statistical outputs of standardized tests and really dig down and say, what does this mean? How are they doing? Where are they weak? Where are they good? Is it communication? Is it oral? Is it written? Is it composition? Is it math? Is it, what type of math skills? And you're really looking at a teacher that possesses a very sophisticated skill set that not only identifies with the individual student what they need and where they are through diagnostic tools, but then understands the system of support outside that classroom, the reading specialist, the speech specialist, if you're lucky enough to find a school nurse, that poor area has been decimated by cuts, and then not only refers that student to that person, but then coordinates the outcome of that activity with that professional and brings that back into the classroom in a comprehensive, holistic way, and then does that on an ongoing basis. But just pause for a second. Wow. is that different than teaching what the textbook says in the next chapter? Now, that's a teacher that I would be impressed with. That's what good physicians do. That's what good healthcare providers do. It's a collaborative, cooperative model, and it works. All you need to do, the origin of that, most people attribute to, is the Mayo Clinic and the whole idea of a group, very specific word with medical practice, a group of physicians working with each other. Good schools do that, and principals create that environment that allow teachers to coordinate, to collaborate, and to help focus the needs of a student, and that's where we get differentiation. But that's a very different skill set than just teaching the content of, you know, what year was the Emancipation Proclamation. Very mm-hmm. different.
Larry in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi, good. I'm glad you got to me. Thank you.
Sure.
You know, part of the issue, I believe, is the children. It's not the teachers. Teachers go there, perform their job, teach the program that's set down for them. If that student don't want to learn or isn't encouraged to do well in school, he's not going to do well in school. It's just that simple. You can say all you want about the teachers, you know, and their skill set and how long they've gone to college and everything they've done. They're so great, this, that, and the other. It's the student. You want to improve the quality of education in America, I believe you give the students the incentive to do well. You know, you were saying a minute ago about Germany, how good they're doing, and yet they have the lowest rate. Their system is set up that if they do well in high school, they get preferential guarantees to go on to secondary school. The better they do in their high schools, the better, quicker they'll get in to a program they want to get into. It's you give the children the incentive, not the teachers. Teachers, or I'm sorry, don't get mad at me, are somewhat babysitters, especially in the early years.
Professor Correa.
Well, first, I want to make sure that we're clear. What I tried to say about Germany was they are the economic engine of Europe. I didn't necessarily say their educational system was superior. Historically, we have a model in the United States of always looking elsewhere for how to do things. That same German education system produced some of the most horrific problems of the last 75 years or so in the world. But the point that the caller is talking about, really, there is movement that way because measurements now are increasingly going to outputs, meaning where's the evidence of student learning, and not necessarily inputs. What are we putting in? So to incentivize students is an interesting argument. Now, again, most teachers and most educators would say that's part of this algorithm, but we have lots of parts of this algorithm, and that may work. At the same time, to say that we need to increase the dropout rate to year or age 18, you know, that's another interesting cross-purpose because you have to find out how do I keep the student in school and not have the student detract from the learning of others. And so this is part of this constant juggling act that education does, which is keeping the engaged students engaged, getting the non-engaged students engaged, and trying to minimize the impact of those that don't even want to be there. And part of that is, of course, we require graduation more or less at age 18, even though students can stay by age 21. So some of this is the cycle that we have. Not everyone's ready to learn at the exact same time. So a broadening view may be appropriate. I don't see a politician running for office, though, saying, let them drop out and drop in later. It's a hard platform to support. But
we have about a minute left. Let's go to Kit. Hi, Kit.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. A minute. Wow.
I'm sorry.
I've been in education for 40 years. I'm a consultant right now, and I'm actually headed to a writing workshop in Maguanago today, and I spent yesterday in Boston doing SMART goals coaching. I just want to say no one appreciates how hard teachers are working today. There are so many initiatives for them to learn and to do and to collaborate with, and collaboration is huge. I agree with that. They don't get the respect. We're not in it for the pay, obviously, but Daniel Pink in his book Driven talks about motivation, what motivates people, and he suggested that if we just pay teachers enough to survive comfortably on, that would be a good thing. I know teachers that leave their rooms at 4 o'clock and go to the mall and work at a job until 9, and that is just really, really sad. So good teachers are it, but it also is the administration from the top down. You'll have to have strong leadership and principals in your buildings to help everything move along. It's so different than 4 years ago, and teachers have a lot to keep up with. But you didn't even talk about the parent element in here. The kids, obviously, we've got issues with that today and attitudes, but we also have parents that are not involved enough with their children's education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that's very true. You look at teacher-parent conferences and how many parents don't come for a variety of reasons, but the home is a whole other issue. Professor Correa, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
We continue the conversation, and we'll always, about education, an important one. Professor Steve Correa is Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College. Joins us from time to time as education news breaks, which it did yesterday with the Obama administration proposing a $5 billion competitive grant program to encourage states to overhaul the teaching profession. This needs congressional approval. It's part of the president's budget proposal. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and we'll return with another interesting hour, so please stay with us. This is the Ideas Network.